Welcome to Diabetes in the Raw podcast. I'm Jamie.
I'm Hayley.
And together we are Diabetes in the Raw. We both live with diabetes, but in different ways.
Jamie has type 1 diabetes and has lived with it for over 25 years and is also a credentialed diabetes educator.
Hayley has two boys who both have type 1 diabetes. Listen in as we share our lived experience
and our guests share theirs.
Please get in touch via our socials or email if you would be interested in coming on as a guest.
Our contact details will be in the show notes.
Nothing in this podcast is intended as individual medical advice. Always talk to your healthcare team before making changes to your diabetes management. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Diabetes in the Raw. This is our second one for 2024 and my co-host Hayley is back. Hey.
Hi Jamie. Glad thanks to be back.
I always go to say, hey Hayley, and it just doesn't work. We'll get straight into it. Hey, we've got a really topical subject today that we've both been talking about, you know, behind closed doors. So we thought, why not jump on? It's Diabetes in the Raw and we're going to see where this conversation takes us. And we're going to stick to roughly 30 minutes. That's our goal because we could go on forever. So we're going to do a part one today and then we'll do some more episodes. Let's shed some light on it. We're going to talk about the weight loss drugs and the type 2 diabetes medications out there. There's been heaps in the media. There's lots of people with very strong opinions on these drugs. And when I say these drugs, I'm talking about things like Ozempic, Saxenda, Mounjaro. You might have heard of Wegovy. Some of the other names you might have heard is semaglutide, liraglutide. Forgive me for not saying these correctly. And a more recent one is the tirzepatide, which is, that is the Mounjaro one. So that one is slightly different. It's one of the latest and greatest because it has a few different ways that it works. We won't go into how they work. But Hayley, do you want to sort of kick us off with, I guess, what you've heard out there? Because I've got some opinions and I thought we're going to make these podcasts a bit more interesting, show our personalities because we are pretty passionate.
Thanks, Jamie. I think the main one I've heard is Ozempic. It's obviously the one we heard about first. And I think probably I first heard about it when it was really in the headlines about there being a shortage of it. And I think when it was discovered, well, perhaps it was known before by the manufacturers, but discovered that it had the weight loss effect.
Mm.
And that it was leading to a shortage because it was being prescribed off-label at that time for weight loss, so people with type 2 couldn't maybe access it. I have also heard of Saxenda, but I've probably heard of Saxenda more as weight loss rather than for diabetes. I think, and I may fall into this category too, certainly at the time when there was a shortage, I endorsed that view that it was in a way wrong for people to take it for weight loss if they didn't have type 2. And I know there's still some very strong views on that out in the wider community. I think within the medical profession too, there's a bit of a split difference as to whether people without type 2, which is the main intention for those medications, there's a bit of a split of decision as to whether it should be used for weight loss. And I think that filters out into a perception within the public as a whole of perhaps it shouldn't be used for that. It's cheat's way to lose weight, and perhaps it's being used not only by those who are at risk of obesity-related illnesses, diseases, but perhaps by those who maybe want to drop a small amount of weight for a specific occasion. I don't know. You actually work in the medical field. Would you agree with any of that?
It's a great intro because that's all the topical, you know, it's everything out there at the moment. And it has been for a couple of years, actually. And I guess the reason I'm interested in it is because, well, my last episode, Hayley, when you couldn't join us, was on pre-diabetes, as you know. And so my passion is to try and catch people before they get that true diagnosis of type 2. And I actually listened to a stat recently. I say listen because I listen to a lot of podcasts from reputable people, and I'm going to put some show notes in with these podcasts I refer to because a massive part of our podcast today is referring to another podcast by Dr. Tina, T-Y-N-A, And I've taken a liking to her because she's very passionate and she promotes what I believe is the correct use of these medications. And I know Hayley's listened to some of it and agrees that, you know, it is important that you don't just take the drug. You actually address lifestyle factors and the root causes of weight gain or the difficulty to lose weight. So my passion lies around why are we giving people such a hard time when they don't have type 2 diabetes for wanting to get on top of things before they get there.
And that's
an example,
right.
Yeah. I was just going to say an example is, you know, you don't wait to have a heart attack before you take a blood pressure or cholesterol medication and no one frowns upon you for that. So I do understand both sides and I am a fence sitter with a lot of things, but I 100% believe that there's a place for this outside of type 2 diabetes for those at risk. And people can be, you know, have elevated glucose levels and insulin resistance doing damage to the body for 10 to 15 years before they get that diagnosis of type 2. So I think if someone's being proactive and wants to address it before they get there, the complications on the person are horrible when you get type 2 diabetes, but the cost to the healthcare system is enormous worldwide as well. So I just think people are just not educated enough.
I think you're right, Jamie, and having listened to some of that podcast, it really resonated with the way she was speaking about that. It's really had this come onto the market initially as a weight loss aid. Nobody would have batted an eyelid. And if it had then been discovered that it has a knock-on effect and helps those with diabetes, helps to regulate the blood sugar levels, it would have been, that's a bonus, what a plus. But I think some of it stems back to there is still a very big public perception that people who are overweight are lazy and it's all their own fault. If they just ate less and moved more, they wouldn't be overweight. Clearly, there is an element, probably for the majority of people in that, class myself in there, as we've discussed on here before, overweight all my life. I appreciate that what I put in my body and how many calories I burn has an impact. However, as we've discussed before, there are genetic components. So it's almost like a double punishment of, well, you got to that state from your own doing and now you're just trying to take a lazy way out and not put the effort in. But the studies are all showing, the medical profession are talking, unless you take the other steps, you're not going to maintain. It's not a click your fingers magic cure.
No, and you're exactly right. And not only will you not maintain, you'll actually end up in a worse state of health because there's this new term called skinny fat. So basically, if you just take this weight loss medication and instead of eating the whole packet of potato chips, you eat half the packet of potato chips, you will lose weight. But metabolically, and I'm talking about insulin resistance and, you know, blood pressure, I'm talking about those things that cause ill health, you will be worse off because you'll have less muscle mass and more fat mass in terms of body composition. So you'll actually be worse off. And you're right, you'll regain the weight and more.
Mm.
So it's, and the problem is there's programs out there that literally drop these drugs off at your door and there is no lifestyle intervention and there is no individualization around dosing and things like that. And what you just mentioned in terms of that stigma about you just need to move more and eat less, Dr. Teen is a bit of a straight talker, which is one thing I love about it. And she does acknowledge that people don't go from healthy weight to overweight to obesity and type 2 diabetes overnight. They had made choices along the way.
Mm.
But as you said, there are factors and real factors that can impact on that. And I'm mindful that I'm potentially offending people as I speak, but there needs to be some acknowledgement that I've got to change some things if I take this medication. It's not just, as you said, the magic pill or the magic shot. I didn't know at the start, these are injectable medications.
And I think as well on that, that they do come with possible side effects, like any medication. They do come with a possible side effect. And for some, you might have a period of time where you have to weigh up, whether that side effect you can endure to gain the benefit. So, you know, it's not really just an easy split decision. Oh yeah, I'll just inject myself with this and everything's going to magically happen. There's quite a lot of factors to consider. And like you say, one area of concern for me is more on the fact that it can just be prescribed, dispensed, away you go. And there's no follow up. There's no oversight, review to see what's happening. And also, if there are no sort of baseline tests done, you know, check cholesterol, check blood pressure, you know, obviously weight, you do probably do that yourself if that's why you're taking it. But if you haven't got those baseline checks, how do you know whether you're improving or, you know, if it's right for you? Because I guess for some people, these may not be the right choice for them.
Yeah. And you know, you've brought me to a good point that I'm a massive advocate for getting all your baseline bloods done at the start, because it's not just about the scales. I think, you know, as a society, we look at people and we look at our numbers on our scales. We don't do body composition. And I'm going to put a link to another podcast. It's called, I meant to write it down. I'll just quickly check. It's basically a doctor, and these guys are all in the United States, but this is where a lot of the information is coming from.
Yeah.
It's called The Doctor's Pharmacy, and pharmacy spelled with an F, Dr. Mark Hyman. He's sort of the other side to Dr. Tina in his podcast on Ozempic, and I'll put the link to this specific episode, basically highlighting the long-term or possible long-term effects of taking this medication, including pancreatitis, gastroparesis, which is, you know, slowing down the digestion, which are all often permanent or serious health complications. But Dr. Tina talks a lot about individualizing the dose, implementing resistance or weight training at the same time, changing the diet. And you mentioned side effects. She talks about how these drugs positively impact on the gut microbiome. So if you've been eating a whole lot of rubbish and junk food for years on end, your gut microbiome is not going to be in a good place. You add this drug and you're potentially going to get a lot more diarrhea and side effects with the gastrointestinal system than someone who's got, you know, quite a clean diet as well. So she actually talks about cleaning up the diet before starting this medication. She talks about microdosing, which is not giving those set doses that the manufacturers recommend. And she talks about going low and slow with medications, whether that's this weight loss drug or any drug. She basically starts low and gradually increases until it's beneficial for that individual, weighing up side effects and complications and things like that. So I guess one of the main aims of this podcast is to link to her, and I have no affiliations with her other than a similar view, or very similar view, and a passion to be very much like her in the future as I study my nurse practitioner, because I think she's doing amazing things. And she does use these drugs herself, and she's fully transparent about that. Mm-hmm. So I just think in the pre-diabetes space, and for anyone who wants to get on top of health issues before they become a massive problem, we really should be applauding them and not just vilifying them.
That's right. I mean, you liken it to, say, somebody who's had a severe accident, maybe got to learn to walk again. You wouldn't hold anything against them if they chose to use something that would aid and assist them, or a painkiller to help them get on their feet. Very, very much, I think, that here we shouldn't be knocking people for trying. Like we said, provided it's being done in an educated, supervised way. But I think part of the issue, as well as that pervasive view about these medications, also we've become such an entitled instant culture that we want everything now. So it's hard to say, okay, low and slow, but I want to drop that 10 kilos now, or I want that weight off now for whatever reason, but not fully acknowledging or understanding the impact of losing weight so quickly And I know Dr. Tina talks about some of the issues that can arise from dropping weight so quickly. So it's like every so many things, it's about that balance. And I think that the part of that is it's acceptance of our differences. I know from my experience in being part of on one of my journeys in losing weight, it was actually Slimming World that I was a part of. I don't think it's very big or even over here in Australia, but this was in the UK. And when I first went, I couldn't understand people being there who had only a couple of kilos to lose. I sort of felt like, well, you shouldn't be here. You haven't got excess weight. You know, you're not obese. You may be a little over what you'd like to be. And I couldn't understand initially that for me losing 20 kilos was as important as them losing 2 or 3. And I would have been the one to say, well, you shouldn't be here. That's nothing. You don't have to lose weight. Whereas now, provided it's within a healthy limit and we're not, you know, leading into an unhealthy body and dangerous situations or food related issues, I accept now that for that person, that is as important to them as it is for me to lose XYZ, however many kilos. So just that acceptance of our differences. And also on that too, accepting not all of us are going to be a particular size or a particular weight or be able to run a marathon. We are all different and we need to accept those differences. And that one solution fits all isn't actually right. I've been listening to a lot more, or not necessarily listening to podcasts, but, you know, following through social media, others in the health and fitness industry, but so much it's coming back to the same thing. Doesn't matter what you do, it will work if you stick to it, if you put yourself in a calorie deficit, know the importance of the food you are eating and the resistance training. So I feel that perhaps we are going to start moving towards that as a wider acceptance, but there are always going to be those out there.
Criticize. I'm so glad you said all that, Hayley, because that reminds me, you know, like it's about what you're used to, you know. So a woman who's been 50 kilos her whole life, who is now 65, 70 kilos, people just listen to that, you're 65, 70 kilos, not considering her height, not considering what percentage of body weight gain that is for her, how that impacts on her joints, her self-esteem, so many things. And when I just said, you know, those people out there wanting to lose those few kilos, it's not those people I'm referring to. It's more around people who are already thin and just want to get thinner. And I even now I'm thinking I shouldn't have said this, but I just want to clarify that you're 100% right. You know, my business name is Real Ideal Health, and I've had that since 2014 with this little image of a person. I'm doing the thing and no one can see me but Hayley. But it's with the scales, basically saying, let's find your happy, healthy balance of what the realistic goal is for you versus the idealistic goal set by body mass index, the BMI, which is, you know, height, weight. It doesn't take into account body composition. Dr. Tina talks about waist measurement, and that's because of the visceral fat. That's the fat around the organs. That's the dangerous stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the stuff that causes insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes. So 100%. If people are got a BMI of 27, which is just overweight, you actually can't get help from a healthcare professional at the time because you're not yet considered obese on the category. Yet these people, and you still have increased health risk. They might have a family history of type 2 diabetes, or they're going through perimenopause. They want to change it. Their body shape's changed. They're actively trying to do something. And they're kind of like, come back when you're 80 kilos or,
that's,
you know,
right.
It's so crazy.
Going back to what we said at the beginning, it's like we're waiting for those issues to have arisen before we agree that it's okay for people to use the tools that are already out there to be used for this very purpose. And it's just a quirk of marketing. This could have easily come onto the market as a weight loss medication, but it didn't come onto the market as that. Had it have done, we wouldn't even be doing this podcast now.
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. And that's where Wegovy has come into it. It was literally marketed as a weight loss instead of type 2. And so the stigma around using that is way less. I still feel like people think of it as a cheat, method. And I get that it can be seen as that. But as you said, there's a lot of other things that go into this. One, you have to be willing to take an injection. And two, if it's done right and you want to actually get results long term with this stuff, you need to be doing the work on your diet and your exercise, or you won't maintain results. And as we've talked about, you'll end up worse off with extra weight, extra fat.
And that's, you know, the debate probably arose years ago, whatever, with people having, I never get the names right, gastric banding.
Yes.
A lot of people would say, oh, that's a cheap way out. Is it really? You're undergoing an anesthetic, carries risks. You're undergoing surgery. You have to alter the way you eat. And again, if you don't adopt the lifestyle changes, you are at risk of putting that weight back on.
And so, a lot do put it back on because there's not enough support around
after, like post-surgery.
Yeah.
Like with this, you still need the support, the guidance to make those healthier decisions that will help keep you away from the health risk factors. So, you know, it'd be lovely if anybody who is on any of these medications is happy to come on and have a chat with us about it and talk about their experiences. We'd love to hear from anybody who's on that journey or been on that journey.
And you can come on anonymously because we do know that it will take a brave person to come on and and sort of admit that I don't have type 2 blood, because you may cop. I mean, not that we're going to put a link to your social media or anything.
No, but just that's right.
If you would prefer to come on anonymously, we can absolutely do that.
Or even just, you know, send us your detail and we can refer to it. We won't refer to you, but hearing people's journeys would be fabulous. And you know, what experiences you've had with the medical profession too. I know I've sat in a doctor's office and basically got told, come back in 3 months if you haven't lost weight, talk about something then. And, you know, personal views do come into it. The doctor may have a personal view on a particular diet, a better word, to follow, whether it's fasting, whether it's cabbage soup, whatever it is. But again, it's that individualized, may not work for you.
100%. And just, I guess, as we wrap up, because this is literally an intro, I feel like we can do another couple of episodes around this, especially relating it a bit more to pre-diabetes and, I guess, diabetes. Like, if we've got people out there with type 2 diabetes who are taking it, what's your thoughts? What's your feelings on people without type 2 taking it? Has it impacted on getting your drugs? And I guess an important thing here is that I have heard from reputable sources that it is the pens themselves that are in short supply, not the actual drug. Mm. And there are lots of different like brands and that of these drugs available. So I guess if you've got the right practitioner prescribing it, just keep trying to get it if you're willing to do the work with the diet and the exercise and everything. Hopefully the doctor or the prescriber can help you get it.
Mm. Jamie, I know we said we don't really want to go in full ins and outs of how they work, but just like a basic premise of the medications, because I think if you don't know what it's actually doing in your body, I feel you should. If you're going to be injecting something in your body, you should know. Now, am I right? And I could well be wrong, that the basic premise is that it helps regulate appetite and helped you with that feeling full to assist you with not, number one, overeating. And then that might encourage you to eat the healthier food options. Is that the premise? They help with like the satiety feeling.
And it's basically working at a stomach level. You know, it's working on the hormones at a gut level to help keep you fuller for longer. It's helping keep glucose levels in range. So it makes your pancreas release more insulin in response to glucose levels, but it's working at a brain level as well. So I've heard a lot of patients say it's reducing that food noise, and the food noise is referring to I'm hungry, I need my comfort food. It just quietens that down so that they can focus on other things with their health. And you know, another whole episode would be on the other benefits of this drugs. Dr. Tina talks a lot about them, and one of them is inflammation, and basically fat cells within the body cause inflammation, and inflammation has a horrible effect on the body as a whole. We're talking pain, we're talking immune system, we're talking gut health, everything. So they're saying it's got positive effects on the brain in terms of dementia and Alzheimer's, osteoarthritis, you know, these drugs, who knows where they're going to go. And I guess that's in healthcare. We look at what we used to recommend with the food pyramid and that it's completely changed. So in 10 years' time, I'll be interested to see where these go. And yes, you do need to be mindful of the long-term consequences, which is why I want to put that other podcast in there, Dr. Pharmacy with an S, because he does talk about those. He doesn't talk specifically about the dosing, though, or how long people are on these medications. And I feel like as a practitioner, like as a clinician, I want to look at the pros and cons. I want to look at all the evidence and just staying on the highest dose forever. You know, that they're just, that's the plan, just stay on that highest dose. That can't be good for your body. And you can override those. Is it impacting on the brain as well? Yeah, but apparently if you're on it long enough and you keep overriding that, you can sort of get to that point where you're back where you started, but on the drug. So then where do you go?
What's your fix from that? I mean, look, I can certainly identify with the overriding, you know, over the years. It's, well, yeah, I'm full, but I really like the taste of that and there's still more weight. So I'm going to have a bit more and I'll suffer the discomfort afterwards, which you only think about that. You don't think about the long term of, oh, if I keep repeatedly doing this, is this going to cause me vascular issues? Am I, you know, the cholesterol, the blood pressure, what you don't think about what you're actually doing to your body. So that educating, you know, like we're saying, working at a metabolic rate, the medications, then understanding what benefit is bringing to your body, as well as, you know, acknowledging any cons to taking it and balance, I think it has to be the way to go. Like with so many things, greater education, greater understanding, not just saying, oh yeah, that's a medication, I'll take it.
Yeah. You know? And I'm glad you sort of raised all those things, because I feel like this podcast has been more of a for than against it, but there's still evidence coming. I guess we still haven't been using these newer ones for very many years, with a greater population using them. So, you know, as I'm studying my nurse practitioner and literally just getting into pharmacology, the prescribing schedule is literally about giving the smallest dose that is effective and individualizing things. So I feel like that should be the most basic things, but I guess these drugs come out, the companies have their studies. The studies are showing you need to be on this dose to lose the greatest amount of weight.
Yeah.
But it's just a mass view of things. And it's just, I don't think any drug should be a mass view of things. So
what is anything ever one size fits all? Yeah. Not really.
Yeah. And so it's an exciting space. I just think it's finding a clinician that really knows their stuff. Mm. And Dr. Tina targets both healthcare professionals and patients. And she's got a lot of free stuff. And I don't know what the catch is. I've signed up and maybe we'll get spammed a bit. But honestly, I've learned so much. She's got a four-part podcast on basically Ozempic, which does generalize to all of these medications we're sort of referring to. And so if you're on the fence, or if you, like Hayley said, felt like it was a cheat's way, if you've been told you've got high blood pressure, high cholesterol, you've got excess weight around the middle, you might go on it for 3, 4, 5, 6 months while you implement lifestyle changes and then come off it. And she talks about cycling back on it for life. Mm. Maybe that's the answer.
Or is the answer, if, because I understand you incrementally increase dosages, because you've got to see how your body tolerates the medication and then, you know, find out if it is benefiting you. It's the same work in reverse. If you're going to come off it, do you drop back down dosage and adjust? I don't know whether that's something clinicians would discuss.
You've got to think about how long it's taken you to push on these kilograms or, and I keep saying kilograms, it's that waist circumference, you know, like perimenopause, women tend to, Dr. Tina calls it fluffy around the middle, and that's where the dangerous weight is. And she does talk about vanity too, and it's how it's almost you're vilified for wanting to lose weight to look good. We're human. We all want to look good. We all want to fit in our clothes. We all want to be able to, you know, go out and not be self-conscious or go for a swim. There's a role for that, 100%. So it's contradicting a bit what I said before, but I'm not here to judge anyone. For me, anyone that wants to improve their health, I just want everyone to think about what you need to do with the medication and not just take it and sit back and continue to eat the same diet but less of it, because you're not going to be healthy for it.
That's right.
So, yeah, as Hayley said, let us know if you've experienced it or if you've got, you know, we're not here to vilify anyone. Really want to emphasize that. There's not a place for it. There's no one knows everyone's circumstances. It's so individual. So don't go giving people a hard time. If you know someone on it, ask them. Like, people may share their deeper thoughts and feelings about their weight their whole life if you actually want to listen to how hard it has been for them. So I think we should judge each other less and be kinder.
100%.
Yeah. And then talking about children and these medications is way out of my scope right now, but there's more happening in that space too. So we can look into that when I've done some more reading, and I guess when it's been trialed a bit more as well.
Sounds good.
All right, Hayley, nice to have you back. And
thanks for having me.
We've actually got a guest in our next episode. I think if we can make that happen, and we'll probably talk again about type 1 diabetes, but the one after that or the next couple, we'll definitely do another one on this. We'll see what feedback we get.
Let us know what you think, people.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Hayley. See ya.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed the episode. Thanks for listening. Please rate us on your favourite podcast app to help us reach more people and make them feel less alone. Remember, some days thriving, others just surviving. If you'd like to make contact with Jamie as a diabetes educator, look up the website www.real-i-deal-help.com. I can also be found on Instagram and Facebook under Jamie Paniora, Real Ideal Health.